DW Deutsche Welle. World in Progress.
Fiddle, banjo, mandolin, and high-pitched singing. That's typical for bluegrass music. And you'll hear a lot more about that because this is a special edition of World in Progress on bluegrass and mountain music. I'm Anke Rasper in Bonn, Germany. This traditional form of American folk music is still very much alive in the Appalachia region. Stretching through the eastern United States of Kentucky, Virginia, West Virginia, and Tennessee, the region has a reputation as being America's poorhouse. The coal boom is long over, and agriculture is not very lucrative in the mountainous area. Outsiders have labeled the people here hillbillies, stereotyping them as backwards. Indeed, this is a place with zealous churchgoers and many low-income families with conservative views. But there are also some very gifted musicians. Our correspondent, Andreas Horchler, met some of them on his journey to Appalachia. They told him why bluegrass music is so special, to express their joys and sorrows, their love for their land, and what it's like to live under difficult circumstances. This report is presented by Sue Cox.
Attention now to the worship of the Lord. Join us for our morning worship celebration.
On the car radio, a Baptist preacher calls on his listeners to lead a God-fearing life.
You must believe God. You must have faith in Him.
3.5 hours southwest of the Atlantic coast, far from the hectic U.S. capital region, it seems like another world. The road winds its way through the dramatic peaks and valleys of the Appalachians. The Shenandoah, the Blue Ridge Mountains, an ancient mountain range that sharply divides the East Coast from the coal fields and remote villages that seem to belong to another age. This is hillbilly country, home to America's conservative have-nots, the out-of-work coal miners, the drug addicts. But it's also home to music, mountain, country, and bluegrass. In the town of Bedford, West Virginia, the Confederate flag still flies proudly in many front yards. More than 150 years after the Civil War ended, the loss is still an open wound. Next to the town hall, flowers adorn a well-kept monument to the soldiers who gave their lives for the South. Nearby is a memorial to the Bedford Boys, the World War II heroes killed at the Allied Normandy landings on June 6, 1944.
My name is Douglas Cooper, and I am actually the director of the Bedford Museum and Genealogical Library in Bedford, Virginia.
Douglas Cooper, a stout man who breathes heavily, runs the local museum. He's crammed the grand old brick building with memories of the past. According to him, the good old days. Every Friday night at 7, Cooper's Museum plays host to a bluegrass jam session.
Now, my wife hates it. She doesn't like the high-pitched lead singers.
It's a mature crowd of around 60 people, men with beards and long grey hair who would look at home on the set of a Hollywood Civil War epic, elderly ladies in their Sunday best. They've brought along banjos, guitars, mandolins, a double bass and fiddles. Local band Common Ground kicks off the evening.
My name is Ricky Ellis. I'm born and raised in Bedford County, Virginia. Born in 1958, started playing music in 1968, and been doing it ever since.
Ricky Ellis has been playing music his whole life. Stubble shades his face, surrounding a mouth with only 4 visible teeth. Dentists in the US often charge outrageous sums for treatment, and bluegrass musicians don't make much money. Ricky plays mandolin and guitar and is flanked by his daughters, Amy on the double bass and Laura on fiddle. Mountain music is acoustic. You won't find electric guitars, keyboards or drum sets here.
So,
The band begins with Can't You Hear Me Calling, a Kentucky Mountain classic by Bill Monroe, the revered father of bluegrass. It's a story from the hills, a heartfelt tale woven into a simple musical structure and performed with passion. Music was all the region's Irish and Scottish settlers had, says museum director Douglas Cooper. They had to sacrifice many things: affluence, advancement, and contact with the outside world.
The part of the South is very rural, and so the only entertainment these people had at night was at the front porch of their homes, and the instruments were inexpensive, and that's all the music they'd ever heard. So they gathered on the porch and they played what we would call hillbilly music or bluegrass music or early country music. That was their entertainment, and that was their love, and it still is to a great part.
Ricky is a pro, through and through, and a world champion mandolin player.
Well, five-time world champion mandolin player. The first time I won it, they have in a place called Union Grove, North Carolina, a world championship, and it was open to anybody. And anyway, it was 1974. And my brothers and I went down there with that band to play, and I was the only one in the bunch that won anything.
For that, you've got to be pretty quick. Let's listen to a little bit.
His daughters Amy and Laura stand out in the crowd, and not just because of their gap-toothed smiles. In their early 20s, they are by far the youngest musicians here.
Both of us grew up watching him play, and so that's we just learned as we grew
contagious.
Up. Yeah, it's contagious, very much so.
And has Laura, a gifted fiddler, ever given classical violin a go?
Actually, no. I can't even read any music. No one in our family can, actually. The most I learned by was some tablature that my dad taught me with for the first couple months when I started learning, and then he said, if you want to learn how to play, you got to learn how to play it by ear. So we just learned from there. So bury me beneath the willow,
Bury Me Beneath the Weeping Willow Tree dates back to the 1920s and was first recorded by the famous Carter family. Ricky and his daughters sound sublime, but for them and countless other Appalachian artists, that hasn't been enough to bring commercial success.
It's got so bad now that, you know, even if you got a real good band, you just can't get even $500 to do it, you know, for a show.
Things just aren't the way they used to be back in those supposed good old days.
In this fairy cell I lie, was far loving, dear old Dixie. In this northern state I die.
Lines from the Civil War song Rebel Soldier, which glorify the slave-owning South. The song stirs up emotions for Ricky.
One song was real famous called The Rebel Soldier. That relates to so much, you know. I mean, everybody can just immediately, it's wanted to bring tears in your eyes. It's such a sad, sad song.
Then the rebel soldier died.
At the Pocahontas Baptist Church in Bassett, Virginia, preacher Jim Hewitt has started a bluegrass group called Pickers and Fiddlers. The name of the church has nothing to do with indigenous heritage. Pocahontas was the wife of the owner of the local furniture company, a church benefactor. Hewitt, a bluegrass fan and guitarist, believes the Holy Ghost can't be shut up in a box. He says God also speaks through banjos, mandolins, and guitars. The founders of earlier, more traditional churches might spin in their graves if they knew of the basement bluegrass sessions. But bluegrass is, in fact, a close relative of gospel music.
People in the Appalachians were oppressed people, so they sang about what was troubling their souls, and this was their way of releasing. They'd work hard during the week in the factories and the fields, and then they'd come together in their spare time and they would sing. And they sang songs about what they were experiencing as individuals. And so that's what they bring to the music.
The Baptist Bluegrass Band is made up of seasoned musicians. They know the mountain music repertoire by heart.
I'm Bobby Scott. I've been playing at the banjo for more years than I can remember. But when I was a little boy, my daddy had one I thought was something to watch him play. He did the old claw hammer style. And I couldn't ever copy it being left-handed like I was. And matter of fact, I just plunked on it just to have something to do. But never got serious about it in my 20s. And I've been trying ever since.
But there's a twinge of bitterness to Bobby's joke.
We don't have much fun, but we make a lot of money.
My name is Tim Martin. I play a fiddle. I've been playing on something ever since I was 7 years old. Well, I won first place fiddling at Galax in 2008. Let's see, I can try a little something here. Let's see.
My name is Fletcher Smith. I'm a mandolin player. And one thing of interest, the fiddle and the mandolin are tuned the same, the strings are the same, but the intervals are a little bit different. But most people can switch back and forth and it doesn't bother them. So if you worked on it, you could do that.
Jim Philpott. I fooled with the harp a little bit when I was in grade school and nobody else was doing it.
I tried to play guitar. I grew up in a musical family, and my dad played banjo about anything he wanted to, and I started trying to play about 5 years old. And then when I married, I was in another musical family, so we just kept going.
The musicians get ready to perform, and Tim Martin is convinced there's a future for bluegrass.
Well, I think bluegrass can survive, but here lately some of the groups that you hear coming out recording that they play on the radio, some of these new groups, they got a little too Nashville'd up.
If you would call me darling, if you would call me dear, if you could learn to love me by and by.
To show what authentic music sounds like, the band plays Your Old Standby, a classic by Jim Eanes.
I'd be something more than just your old standby.
At the end of the session in Bassett, it suddenly becomes clear once again that we're in a church. Musicians and audience raise their voices together, singing not bluegrass, but age-old spirituals. Further west, Virginia narrows to a strip of land wedged between Tennessee to the south and Kentucky to the north. Just off the Carter Highway is the Carter Family Fold, an oversized wood-clad shed that can hold nearly 1,000 guests. This is where the story of mountain gospel music's first family is told, the story of A.P., Sarah, and Maybelle Carter. From 1927 until the late 1950s, the family recorded songs that had been passed down through the generations. Their children, Helen, Anita, Joe, Jeanette, and June Carter Cash, wife of Johnny Cash, would later join the family band. Sarah sang lead vocals, Maybelle sang the harmonies and played guitar. Songs like Will You Miss Me When I'm Gone made them famous around the world.
You're gonna miss me by my prayers, you're gonna miss me everywhere. Oh, I know you will miss me when I'm gone. You're gonna miss me by my song, you're gonna miss me all day long. Oh, I know you will miss me when I'm gone. When I'm gone.
When I'm gone.
When I'm gone.
When I'm gone.
Oh, I know you will miss me when I'm gone.
Featured in the 2012 film Pitch Perfect, a new version of the song enjoyed something of a renaissance. Hundreds of thousands of young fans learned to tap out the song's rhythm with plastic cups. Hence its name, the Cup Song.
I got my ticket for the long way round, to buy the whiskey for the way, and I sure would like some sweet company, and I'm leaving tomorrow, what do you say? When I'm gone, when I'm gone, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. You're gonna miss me by my hair, you're gonna miss me everywhere. Oh, I know you're gonna miss me when I'm gone.
They're volunteers, including myself, so it takes a lot of work.
Today, Rita Forrester takes care of the Carter family fold, dressed like a character from a late 19th century period drama. As the granddaughter of A.P. and Sarah Carter, she announces the bands that perform at the family fold, sometimes singing along with a few of the old songs. She's responsible for her family's legacy and the hundreds of songs recorded over several generations. She says her grandfather, A.P., was a special man.
He only had up to a third grade education, so he wasn't a formally educated person, but there was a timelessness about him. I think he knew that his music and that what he had done, which was basically capture the songs from these mountains, he might just end up with a verse and then he'd put music to it, or maybe he just got a tune and then he'd put words to it. But he was a songsmith, a song craftsman, and I think they just need to learn that it's so important to hold on to your history and to cherish it and nurture it and not let it go.
How many of you folks like this mandolin playing? You don't hear much of that.
Tonight's band is Big Country Bluegrass. They play furious, fast numbers with the occasional slow waltz now and then as a break. Like most people in Appalachia, the Carter family comes from very humble beginnings.
It was extremely poor, this area. It's called Poor Valley, is what people call it. So my granddad did many things to earn a living. He was a carpenter. He ran a sawmill. He would farm. He sharecropped. He had people sharecropping with him. He did anything he could to make a living, as most folks did.
Everything of value is taken from Appalachia, but hardly anything comes back, people here often say. The best mountain music is absorbed by the country music factory in Nashville. Forests are cleared, agriculture doesn't amount to much, and the coal mines brought riches only for mine owners. Appalachia is a magnet for those who write and report on poverty in America. Poverty porn, it's called. Dee Davis, a heavy-set man with a full grey beard and large horn-rimmed glasses, is well acquainted with the concept. He's head of the Center for Rural Strategies across the border in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
I think the issues of poverty are always difficult in this country because it's ironic. It's a rich country, and when we try to discuss people who are not doing well, we fall back on old stereotypes and old imagery, and sometimes bringing those images out is a little pornographic. In places like the Central Appalachian Coalfields, it's been a long time when we've been poor by national standards and in some respect by international standards.
Things aren't likely to change anytime soon. The U.S. government declared war on poverty more than 50 years ago. Former President Bill Clinton pledged his support, and Barack Obama has provided funds for education and business stimulus. So far, it hasn't helped much.
The politicians are a bunch of scallywags. They'll say whatever they need to say if they think it gets votes. And of course, politics follow culture.
The people living here are often mocked as uneducated, stubborn, conservative hillbillies. Their songs, with the high voices, the fiddles, the banjo, the mandolin and guitar, are often ridiculed. But this treatment does not do them justice. In their old songs, the musicians tell the story of America. They have a keen sense of home, a sense of community, which is rare. As more and more people work in the industries of the Northern Ohio Valley, sometimes 10 days straight, they still manage to travel home to the mountains on their four-day breaks.
I know they had beds in the living room. I remember that myself. This was
the small town of Rosine sits in western Kentucky, isolated and alone on top of the Jerusalem Ridge. There are a couple of streets, a shop, and after a short drive along the country road, the family home of Bill Monroe, the father of bluegrass. It's a small one-story wooden building, once home to many children.
These are his brothers. There's Harry and Speed, John, Birch, Charlie, and Bill was the youngest. And he also had two sisters.
Mary Sue Rimfro shows people around, pointing out the old sewing machines, banjos, and oil paintings painted by her aunt. She also tells stories from Monroe's life and inspiration, including the legendary Blue Moon of Kentucky.
Blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining. Shine on the one who's gone and proved untrue. Blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining.
There is a time, it's like in July or August, sometime around that time, it's supposed to be a blue moon. It's not actually real blue, but they call it the blue moon.
Across the way lives Tom Ewing.
My name is Tom Ewing. I played guitar with Bill Monroe during the last 8 years of his life, from 1986 to 96.
Yes, Monroe could be a bully, but if you played what he wanted, he was a great guy. And in his later years, he no longer required his bluegrass boys to help out with the farm work, as he did in the beginning. Does this reflect a conservative stance in Monroe's music?
Yes, I think so. Definitely, the basis of the music stems from hardcore, hardworking Christian outlook on life, and hard work pays off, and you should be working all the time and not playing all the time. And it's a different world altogether.
My name is Chris Joslin. I'm the executive director of the International Bluegrass Music Museum and Hall of Fame, and we're in Owensboro, Kentucky.
On the Indiana border, Chris Joslin heads up the International Bluegrass Music Museum. It features many photos, instruments, and bronze plaques, a modest hall of fame dedicated to the stars of bluegrass. Of course, Joslin himself is a musician. Before the interview, he wants to play a few bars. He grabs a banjo and unceremoniously pushes a guitar into this reporter's hands.
So why don't we try in key of G?
You just play whatever you want to play.
Okay. Yeah. G's okay for you. Okay.
Yeah, Chris says he's no fan of rock and roll, but he's soon playing a bluegrass tune at breakneck speed on his banjo. It's an instrument from Africa, a music that has much in common with the songs of African Americans.
It's almost like a different way to sing the blues in many ways. You know, these people were singing songs and writing songs that were really the story of their life, you know, and oftentimes was about struggle and poverty.
My name is Dr. Cheryl Clemens. I'm the Vice President for Academic Affairs and the Academic Dean here at Brescia University.
The Catholic Brescia University in Owensboro plans to start a bluegrass program next year. But there are still a few issues. The training program should have a practical focus, but bluegrass musicians usually aren't able to read notes. And says Dean Sister Cheryl Clemens,
it gets more complicated to get it through our accreditation process because these are practitioner credentials. I doubt that there are very few PhDs in bluegrass music in the world.
Professor Daryl Dockery is set to head up the program. Those with a bachelor degree needn't head back to the mountains and sit on the porch, picking and fiddling. There are jobs in music, event management, production, and musical education.
Once we tear down some of the walls, like in music education, why couldn't a person that has a bluegrass degree, why would they not be able to be a music educator with kids? You know, Orff and Kodai, who are the masters of methodology in education, they taught that we teach kids through folk music, their own folk music and their own language. Well, in Kentucky, our language is bluegrass.
Jocelyn takes his banjo and plays Bill Monroe's Foggy Mountain Breakdown, a song that was made famous by the 1967 film Bonnie and Clyde. The mountains, according to Jocelyn, have something else to offer than Nashville, something important.
When you think about style versus substance, you know, bluegrass, maybe it's lacked a bit of style from time to time, but it has always been big on substance, you know.
More importantly, adds Ricky Ellis, the mandolin virtuoso from Bedford, Virginia.
Friends come and go. Bluegrass friends don't. They stick with you.
Tom Ewing, the guitarist who went on tour with bluegrass legend Bill Monroe, is nonetheless skeptical about the music's future. Will it survive?
I would hope so, of course. But as far as musical trends go, I don't see bluegrass surviving that long. But if it does, that would be wonderful. But people are fickle, and they move from one style of music to another. And if it's still popular in 50 years, I will be surprised.
I am a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world below. There is no toil, no sick nor danger in that bad land to which I go.
A recording by bluegrass music legend Bill Monroe ending this documentary on bluegrass and mountain music by our correspondent Andreas Horchler. It was presented by Sue Cox. Thank you for tuning into this special edition of Who Bald in Progress. You can listen back to this and other editions of the show at dw.com/worldinprogress or on SoundCloud and iTunes. Hope you enjoyed this show and that you'll tune in again next week. Till then, in Bonn, Germany, I'm Anke Raspar. Goodbye.